Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. The way prospective GPs are trained hasn't changed in Australia since 1973, when hospital experience was made a requirement for all medical students, including those going into general practice. But in the intervening years, both hospitals and general practice itself have changed significantly. The question of whether we are preparing GP registrars effectively for their chosen speciality is one tackled by Associate Professor Susan Wern from the Australian National University, Professor Parker McGinn from the University of Newcastle, and Professor Neil Spike from the University of Melbourne. In a perspective published online by the MJA on the 5th of March 2018, they suggest that the time has come for a rethink. Associate Professor Wern is my special guest on the pod today. Your perspective is about GP vocational training and whether or not it can be improved and needs improving. What's the current training pathway for junior doctors who want to be general practitioners?
There are a range of options. The main pathways that junior doctors who want to become general practitioners in Australia take are to join the Australian General Practice Training Program. And in that training program, they can choose to become fellows of either the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners or the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine, or both. And both of those lead to qualification as a general practitioner. The other options are that you can apply for the Remote Vocational Training Scheme and the ACRM Independent Pathway. And then there's also a practice eligible pathway for the College of GPs.
Do all junior doctors have to do hospital training before they start their specialty training?
Yes, that's a requirement of both colleges. They have slightly different requirements between the two colleges as to what is expected within those hospital terms. Mm. But there's a range of terms that juniors can take, which then they will use that experience within general practice. Some of them, particularly for the College of General Practitioners, it's a requirement that everybody would have done some experience in paediatrics before they work within general practice. For ACRM, there is an expectation that people will have experience within a rural hospital and have some emergency medicine skills before they work in general practice.
Now, those requirements for doing some form of hospital training have been in for a long time, haven't they, since the early 70s, haven't they?
Yes, the history seems to be that the Australian model followed the UK model, mm-hmm. which was that you would spend some time within hospitals doing a variety of posts before then being allowed out into general practice.
But surely the hospital system's changed a lot in those 40-odd years. Are there any downfalls for hospital training for GPs now?
Where we've come to with this perspective is not actually where the research started.
Yes.
Our research started by looking at what are the questions that new and ongoing GP registrars are asking their supervisors. So what does that tell us about what they know and what they think they need to know when they're working within general practice? And as we were writing up the results from that questioning and realising what questions registrars were asking, as a group, Parker McGinn and Neil Spike and I were discussing it and realising that Australia has this tradition of hospital followed by general practice, and mm-hmm. it's similar across many parts of the world. And yet hospitals have changed dramatically and general practice has changed. Previously, it would have been that general practitioners were mostly seeing people with an acute short-term illness. And so when they were working within the hospitals, they would be seeing people with acute illness, but the more serious version. So as a learning experience, that was reasonable, that you saw what could happen in the hospital, and then you learned how to intervene earlier when you were working in general practice. Nowadays, they're just poles apart in terms of the care that is delivered and yep. the nature of the practice. And yet we have not necessarily had that national discussion as to the suitability of one for preparing people to work in the other.
Is that down to the rise of chronic diseases, or is there something else going on in hospitals that now doesn't really help GP registrars?
Yes and yes. It is the rise in chronic disease which has changed general practice. General practice also over the 40 or so years since training started has changed to really have been much more sure about the sort of our approach to practice and the way that we interact with patients and with other health professionals within primary care. And it's much more of a walking with people who happen to have an illness rather than, I hope this is not too unkind of hospital colleagues, of whom I'm extremely grateful they do their job, but much of their role is doing things to people in with the intent of helping them to get back out. And that's quite a different mind shift and approach to practice, whereas ours is much more community-based and people come in and we work with them for many years. People I saw yesterday in clinic who I've known for 18 years, quite different. So hospital and general practice is different. The chronic disease is different. And then the way that things work within hospitals has become much, much more efficient. It had to. And so there's high tech things. People are kept in for as short a time as possible. And the shift to which I'm so grateful for, I'm glad that there's been a change to junior doctors not having to work the 102 hours a week that I was contracted to do my first ever job.
Oh my God.
That only leaves 66 left.
Yes.
So there had to be change, and there's a multitude of changes that shift work, high tech, short stay, increased involvement in specialists in making decisions for people who are the most unwell in society. That has all been a good thing, but it has had an educational consequence that maybe we need to think about, well, what is the educational consequence and what can we do to, it's not that hospitals are failing juniors.
No.
No one set out to, but is there other things that hospitals and juniors who work there could be thinking about differently to ensure that they do feel well prepared to come into general practice?
Tell us, if you can, what the impacts are for GP registrars now when they walk into a practice and are expected to see a patient. What's the impact of that hospital training or the inappropriateness of that hospital training? What's the impact for them and their patients when they walk in the door?
Much of this is from other people's research and from my own experience and discussion with colleagues. As somebody said to me this week, they're lower down the pecking order of the hierarchy of decision making in the hospital. So they come out with less ability to make their own clinical decisions and see what actually happens as a result of those clinical decisions. Yeah. So when I was on call for an 80-hour weekend, if I stuffed up on Friday morning, I'd be still living and learning the consequences of that mistake or that good decision Sunday evening, Monday morning. That is not as easy for people to see. So when they then come into general practice, they're not as used to making those decisions, living with them and seeing the consequences of those decisions. They're also used to making those decisions and somebody else putting them into practice. You know, I write the drug chart as a doctor in a hospital, therefore the patient will take the drug. That ain't what happens in general practice.
No.
I have the wonderful job of trying to suggest, cajole, advise, recommend, and find ways that will grab that person's attention and make them want to come up with, oh, yeah, that's a good idea to do that. Much of the lifestyle issues, some of the chronic disease, talking with people about their weight. So philosophically, it's a very different approach to be sitting in a room on your own. And registrars describe that as being quite scary. And they're suddenly seeing a range of illness that they've not seen before, treating with they may be using medications that they've got experience with, but they may not. And making decisions and being it for the first time in their life. And there's not a crowd of others that they can discuss things with before they actually have to make a decision.
That must be making them anxious, not to mention lacking in confidence.
Yes, that's the impression we get from looking at them, whereas people from who had got used to being on call at night on your own, however unpleasant that was within hospitals, and again, I'm glad it's changed, meant that when they came into general practice, they were at least used to it.
So basically making hospitals better has had an unintended consequence on the way GP registrars come out of their training.
That's my theory, yeah.
What can we change to make registrars coming into a practice better prepared and more confident about the way they go about things?
I do love the expression, begin with the end in mind. So I think at the moment there may be a sense of, I need to get through this hospital experience, I need to survive it, and a sort of passive survival as opposed to an active, right, this is where I want to be. I know what I'm going to need to know in general practice. I know enough about the approach in general practice that this is what I'm going to need to do. So these are the things that I'm going to, this is how I'm going to spend my time. And these are the things I'm going to focus on learning. So I think, as we tried to write in the paper, that there are things that registrar, future GPs can do themselves. There are things that hospital directors of the hospital education programs could consider. How does my education program not only help the registrar now, but in the future? And then if the hospital specialists are able to welcome GP registrars to clinics, that will be useful for future GP registrars. So, for example, when I was working in hospitals, I made a beeline for the dermatology clinics when I had some spare time, because that's where I knew that I would need to be learning. And that still shows up as a number one need for learning for GP registrars. So going to the clinics, going to outpatients, if it's possible within the rosters, but at least focusing that and having a clearer idea of what general practice is before starting. In my career, I've been privileged to work with many doctors like me who've come in from overseas. And in different countries, general practice, primary care, hospital care work very differently. And to come from a very different health system and then work in the hospital and then go to work in general practice, but without a really clear idea of what Australian general practice is, I think is difficult. So if those who've come from different countries could be encouraged to, even on a voluntary basis, spend some time in general practice, know what they're aiming for, they might then have the opportunity to use their hospital experience in a different way rather than just trying to get through and get out.
Are there things the colleges could be doing differently?
Certainly the college focus up to now has been on the training and continuing professional development. They do information evenings and to encourage people to come into general practice. I think if some of their learning materials, particularly the topics that we've highlighted that are common in general practice and not necessarily going to be able to be seen in hospitals,
yes,
providing those learning materials, if that was possible earlier on or ahead of it, just to get more familiar with the sorts of conditions and sorts of treatment plans that are going to be needed once you become a GP.
In Canada, do GP trainees work in hospitals at all before they go into practice?
No. In Canada, it's GP training is a two-year program. Immediately after medical school, there is no equivalent of an intern year. The supervisor has quite a very intense role. So every patient that the registrar will see, there is a discussion with the supervisor. At the beginning, it's at the end of every consultation. And then as the registrar becomes more experienced, it's usually at the end. It can be at the end of the session or at the end of the day. So it's a very different way of doing things, but it it seems as though that intense supervision may provide an opportunity for registrars to learn from each patient. So that seems to have some attractions rather than our current way here of presuming that registrars are okay and know what they're doing until they ask for help. The Canadian GP College determines, or family physicians, determines the content of the learning very closely. So the registrars don't learn anything that is not going to be relevant to their future work as a GP. So even if the emergency medicine people very kindly give their suggestions as to what might be relevant to a future GP, there's a robust discussion with the description.
Yes, I bet there is.
And the College of GPs will say, actually, no, we don't think our registrars need to learn that because we've only got them for the 2 years.
If you had a magic wand, what would you change straight away to make things better for GP registrars?
Letting them know what they're needing to know before they start, supporting them through those initial times. So on day one, they can use the computer and know how to do so before they're expected to see patients. It's interesting because historically, you know, if you're wanting to get onto a surgical training scheme, you would never think, oh, well, I'll just learn the anatomy as I go along. You would know that it was a highly competitive training scheme. You had to prove yourself and you would do everything that you could to prove your skills. Now, I don't want necessarily that intense competition because I am concerned about junior doctor well-being, but one of the ways of looking after your well-being is actually preparing yourself. Some sort of clear, these are the things you're going to need to know and this is going to help you. And my long-held view as a GP supervisor is that greater support at the beginning of training, if it was possible, would be a good thing for registrars and probably for patients and for supervisors too. I think really what we tried to do in the paper is so show the common things that people should cover and then the things that crop up in general practice that really don't necessarily get much coverage in medical school either. So we divided the learning topics into things that you're likely to see, but they're different from hospitals. Things that are you're likely to see, but you'd hardly ever see in hospital, like back pain, eczema, sore throats. A registrar who's done an ENT term might be thinking that every sore throat is a quinsy. It's a bit unlikely.
Yeah.
So you need to recalibrate your learning to, okay, what's most likely here? Then the other one is the infrequently taught ones, developmental and behavioural problems in children, eye diseases. You know, there's a men's health. There's quite a, if a registrar sees a patient with an eye problem or a neurological problem, there's really quite a high chance that they're actually going to ask their supervisor for help.
You wrote this perspective on the back of some research that you've done with some colleagues. Tell us a little bit about the team.
The group who started this were the training program in Newcastle and in conjunction with Newcastle University. They started it because they wanted to find out what GP registrars were actually doing in practice, which patients they were seeing. And then it's grown as registrars have found that getting in information about their own practice and then being able to reflect on that with their supervisor, that's then grown and being used by more of the regional training organisations so that they can pull together that information and find out what registrars as a whole have as learning gaps. And now we're using it as a national tool to determine the gaps and what's working and what's not working well with GP registrars. So the group in Newcastle are Parker McGinn has led this with Simon Morgan, who was one of the originators of it. And now there's a significant team who do all the stats and all of the legwork to make sure that registrars get the information about their practice and they can learn, and then we can actually consider and use the information to determine whether the training program's meeting the community needs.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.